I was supposed to tell this story about how Kane had this girlfriend that he killed in a car crash. And it was just insane. And it ends up, I'm at a funeral home with a dummy in a coffin.
Oh, my God.
With Kane's mask on, pretending I'm Kane. I'm on top of the coffin having mock sex with this mannequin.
Oh, my God, no.
And
Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. And Vince is yelling at me. God damn it, do it harder, make more noise and stuff. It's got to be over the top.
I really did. I screwed your brains out.
You know, honestly, I feel sorry for the family of Jody Hamilton.
I know, kind of got lost in the.
He's kind of getting lost in the sauce. I mean, I say that jokingly because I think Jody Hamilton is a worthy historical figure, and obviously I think his son has done a tremendous job as a referee, and he trained a bunch of people and had a great impact. There aren't a lot of people even that have a lot of bad things to say about Jody Hamilton, but
from what I saw, there wasn't. No,
the news over the past 120 hours or so has been all about Bobby Eaton, and some people that you never thought would redeem themselves have redeemed themselves. The wrestling community in of itself is usually pretty awful. And I'm not putting myself above any of that, but people have been really great ever since they had the announcement early on the morning of August the 5th that Bobby Eaton had left us. He passed away late in the day on August the 4th. I hope everyone by now has had a chance to listen to the Jim Cornette Experience, and just a tremendously emotional Jim Cornette talking about his life and his love of Bobby Eaton and all the things that Bobby Eaton had done for him in his life. And I think I'll just start there. Jim Cornette has any number of misgivings and failures as a human being. I think those have been detailed and cataloged fairly well, right?
I would pretty much concur with that, yes.
Not limited to the death threats against Wade and Bruce and various other people in life. I mean, I've always supported his red-hot hatred of Vince Russo, sure. And Jimmy's somewhat checkered racial past. And again, I don't want to go into great detail. As I said, I wasn't going to go into great detail. But his remembrance of Bobby was tremendous. And there's just, if you look at the history of Jimmy when it comes to Bobby, he completely did right by his friend all the way to the very end. They were looking for paydays even going into the next couple of years with the 40th anniversary of the Midnight Express. Jimmy famously hates to travel or do anything, could have easily stayed in Louisville, but was always looking for opportunities to get together with the boys. And he just knew that showing up in Winston-Salem or Knoxville or wherever would make it that much bigger and make more money for the boys. And that's why he would travel and go to these places. Obviously he likes the memorabilia and stuff, but he would be perfectly, if he never had to leave home again, Jim Cornette would never leave home again. And he looked for opportunities to get paydays for those guys. Stan didn't care and wouldn't come out of his house ever again either. But, you know, even for when we saw Stan in Winston-Salem, Stan realized it was going to be a bigger deal and make more money for everybody involved, and they would do that stuff essentially for Bobby. So,
well, Stan was wanting to, he couldn't figure out what to do with that illegitimate daughter, Lauren Boebert of his, you know, that's what he's been all consumed with these past few years.
But Jimmy, his entire life, felt a responsibility and to pay back what Bobby had given him, and was trying. Even till the very end, as you heard in those conversations on the podcast, he was talking to Bobby about, hey, we're going to do this and that, and we're going to do the cameo thing, and this is going to be a thing. And Jim Cornette has no qualms about doing right by his friend Bobby Eaton all the way until the very end. And I think it was remarkable that the last conversation that they had, Jimmy was able to tell him that he loved him and he was very happy and pleased and thankful for all that Bobby had done for him in his life. And I think even till the very end, Bobby just didn't get it. Bobby just didn't understand how loved he was by people until, you know, he took his very dying breath. I often wonder, I don't know what the afterlife shows or has, but if Bobby was able to see this now, I don't know even if he would be able to process it now, Brian. I don't know if he would be able to get it.
It doesn't seem like he would. But yeah, I just, God, man, I just, I, when people like that pass and I think about people who are still with us, it just, I'm sorry, man. I shouldn't say it that way, but it's just,
yeah,
it's such a good guy, man. Such a good guy. And, just in the times we met him and, just from everything that we've heard and read and seen and just in the last few days, not to mention stuff over the years that we've seen and heard. So it's just, I don't know, man, this one just kind of hit different than a lot of the other ones. And, you know, and I did listen to Cornette's podcast and I agree with you on everything you said about him. I will say again that I told you earlier that I think that Brian Last did an excellent job of keeping Jimmy on the rails the entire show,
right?
Because wheels were getting loose there for a second before Last he told Last to start talking after like 10 or 15 minutes in the beginning. So, but once that got going and it just kind of, I knew that would happen though, you know, didn't you, that once Last got him on the track that it would just kind of flow, you know,
we just needed a bunch of stories. We just needed the stories and stuff. And that's exactly what we got. Some of which were just repetition, but not everybody knows all those stories.
No. And it's always good to hear him again. Always listen. You know, that's one thing about Cornette, say what you want about him, but God dang, I can listen to that son of a bitch tell a story all day long. Yeah. So, you know,
there's nothing, there's just zero controversial about Bobby Eaton. There's just like, no, I fucked me on this payoff. He did that. There's just nothing. There was just.
Well, just the thing about Flair that he was talking about, you know, that Flair didn't want to lose to him when they were having their feud, you know?
That was amazing. 1989, Flair's the booker for WCW and the world champion. And he's got two people he wants to wrestle in singles competition. It's Brian Pillman and it's Bobby Eaton, and they book him and they said, okay, I'll wrestle Bobby and I don't want to beat him. And Jim's like,
what?
It's like, because Bobby would have been more than happy to job, if you want to call it that. He would have lost to Ric Flair in a heartbeat. He would have never thought a second thought about it, but Ric Flair's like, no, I don't need to beat him. Which,
but back then I don't know if I was a fledgling fan back then, but a younger fan in 89 for sure. You know, I kind of thought when that feud happened, I was like, wow, I'm kind of impressed that they're giving Bobby Eaton a title run here. Yeah. And this is, you know, before all the inside stuff, you know, computers or anything like that. So I was just, as a fan, I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. So I was almost ready for him to win, to be honest, because I thought, you know, they got to be doing this for a reason. So, right. But now I see what the reason was just because Flair wanted to work with it, basically.
Remember, 89 was that trilogy, including the Wrestle War in Nashville with Ricky Steamboat, and then he wrestles Terry Funk. I mean, it's just that those amazing matches. And, you know, not Ric Flair not even being the youngest guy in the world back in 1989, he decides in the midst of all this, we want to have a showcase for WCW and show why we're wrestling and WWE is cartoons and, you know, ice cream bars and shit. So the guy that I want to showcase wrestling with is Bobby Eaton. And oh, by the way, I don't want to beat him because I, that to me is the craziest part of it. And Jimmy's like, really? It's so funny because all that even ended up pissing off Jim Herd that much more because Jim Herd never, ever, ever, ever got it. He never got anything. He was just, a guy that's, if there ever there's an anti Bobby Eaton in the wrestling business, it was Jim Herd. Somebody who was,
It's like, every time you hear a story about Jim Herd, it's like, there's a story about him being pissed off about something.
Well, would you ever go, has anybody ever in the history of ever, when somebody told a story about Jim Herd, go, now wait a minute, he wasn't that big an asshole.
I haven't heard that, no.
You're exaggerating that. There's no way he was that bad, that stupid, and that big a dick. No, nobody's ever done that because, again, Bobby Eaton did shit that just was natural and he was good. And Jim heard the shit that was just natural and he was a dick. And that just came to him naturally.
Big difference there.
And I don't even know, just like Jim Herd, Bobby Eaton couldn't teach what he did. I mean, that was the problem. Jim talked about that when they took him to WWE, they were taking him to WWE. He can't really teach what he did because he just did shit that was right and it was awesome. And he couldn't really think about how he did it. And I pushed off this way and I would rotate my body. He couldn't do it. And Jim Herd couldn't think about why he did shit. He was just like, the worst decision you can make, that's what I'm going to do. Instinctively, I'm going to go for it. And being the biggest dick that I can, that's what I do. And that's what Jim Herd did. So that, I mean, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then the idea, if I'd known, I'd forgotten the idea that Stan and Bobby were going to become horsemen at some point. I mean, that was another one. That was kind of a revelation.
I remember that. I'd forgotten it, but I do remember when he mentioned it, I'd said, oh yeah, I do remember that.
You know, holy shit. How fun would that have been as a fan? It would have been like, that would have been really interesting to have those guys as horsemen.
Golly. Yeah. They could have had all kinds of stuff come out of that.
You know, you've seen, and Jimmy was paying tribute to All Elite Wrestling and AEW very properly, you know, put out the
Tony Khan himself and mentioned him.
He did. And he thanked him and thought, it, you know, I almost think if there's any way to do it, and I don't know if it's going to happen, but because it would require Tony Khan sending a limo up to Louisville. But I almost think that they would do something at the beginning of that show on Wednesday night with Jimmy coming out and the crowd chanting Bobby's name. And, you know, that's how you would start that show on Wednesday. And if Jimmy would ever agree to it, because he's not going to fly and he's not going to get in his truck and drive to wherever he's going to go.
Where they're going to be?
I don't know where they're going to be, but I mean, I would think that maybe Tony Khan would send a limo and then, you know, all would be right in the world. Everything would be, it's just weird that you're seeing the lion and the lamb laying down together. But I'm very happy that everybody did that. I'm very happy that everybody got together and did the right thing, with the exception of Vincent Kennedy McMahon, it would seem. I haven't really seen, he's been.
Well, yeah, it's not verified, but I'm not convinced it happened.
We were looking and I can't even tell you the last time I watched an entire 3-hour Raw because I fall asleep.
Who the fuck does, dude?
Nobody can. Vince McMahon doesn't, I don't think. I don't think people that are on the show watch the entire show. I don't think the announcers, whoever, Jimmy Phillips or whoever, I don't know who's the announcer for, who's the lead announcer for Raw?
Don't even ask me that question.
That's like, I don't even think they watched the entire. There was a famous Brad Krantz show joke many years ago, which cost his radio station a lot of money. They had, and you'll remember this, it was back when they did the affiliate flip in this area, and Channel 45 became ABC and then Channel 8 became Fox. Remember that whole thing? And they started doing that. I think local news on Channel 45, and the ratings came out and it was dreadful. It was just bad.
It was a disaster. Yes.
And Brad said on the air, even the cameramen weren't watching, which the station took some umbrage into and may have pulled their ads for a little while, but you know, it's not like he was lying.
Come on, shit.
That's how I feel about it.
He probably wasn't lying. That's the thing.
The point of all this is I can't see anything about Bobby Eaton being paid any homage to on any WWE programming, and they had 5 days. But as I was telling you before we started, to be fair, the people who would have put together that package were probably fired at least 2 weeks ago. There's nobody to even do that anymore. So that's bizarre to me.
I guess I shouldn't be really shocked either way.
All Elite Wrestling's Dynamite originates from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And you'll be reminded of this because James Ross tweeted a picture of his wife's urn, which is a Pittsburgh Steelers urn. And Jan was a big Steelers fan, Pittsburgh girl. Oh,
I did not know that. I thought you were going to refer to Miss DMD or Doctor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The doctor, yeah.
Shit taker BME, who's on, they've got her on the posters and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that's where they're going to be. Let me see how far it is from Louisville to Pittsburgh.
It shouldn't be that far.
I don't think it's a bad drive. I'm not sure. I know I've driven Pittsburgh to Cleveland and it was fine. 392 miles from Louisville to Pittsburgh, 6 hours and 6 minutes. I don't know. I don't know. He may be, honestly, and again, the real key to this would be Tony Khan sending a limo, because I don't think Jimmy would. I think Jimmy's too heartbroken to do much of anything these days.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, him getting in front of a bunch of people and doing something like that, too, that's another thing. He didn't even want to do the podcast.
But to hear the thousands and thousands of people chanting, Bobby Eaton. I mean, come on. That's a moment. We can't let that pass by, can we?
And don't you think the people, and this is a credit to AEW and their fans.
Yeah.
Out of the two, out of WWE and AEW, don't you think the fans there would be more apt to do what you just said than 100%. WWE fans?
100%. As critical as I have been of that promotion and their fans and all the other stuff. Yeah, I mean, and they've done it right. And they've got the people who appreciate it. They've got FTR. I mean, the FTR guys, 100%. And then you saw they talked about the GoFundMe. And there's Chris Jericho, who's a complete asshole, giving a great amount of money to that family. They pulled down the GoFundMe for Bobby because they were only looking for $10,000. They raised 20 in, I think, less than 24 hours.
It was crazy, like, yeah.
And the kids didn't want it to seem like it was a money grab. And Jimmy's right. He said if they would have kept it up, they would have gotten over 100. Yeah. I completely agree with that.
Well, I saw some pretty big names. I gave a little bit. I had to, man. I felt like it's the least I could do.
Sure.
It wasn't much, but I felt like I needed to do something like that. So I was curious and looked and saw that Chris Jericho and saw that Cody gave some money and a whole list of people, man. It was really good, man. It's really good to see that.
It's been a remarkable few days as people have kind of, in the oddest ways, redeemed themselves. It's almost like the people who were watching and in the wrestling community, it's almost like they figured it out. Like, okay, maybe the best guitarist of all time isn't Jimi Hendrix or Stevie Ray Vaughan or Eric Clapton or B.B. King or even Robert Johnson. This Joe Bonamosa guy, you should really listen to him. Or this Django Reinhardt guy, you should listen to him. I mean, that's what people are kind of figuring out, that like, there's been a lot bigger names. There's been a lot of guys who have been champions. There have been your Luthes's, and there's been your Ric Flairs and your Bruno Sammartinos and all of these people. But like anybody who was ever around Bobby said, this guy was the very best. This guy was beyond anything. And he was doing stuff before people did it. He could do moves on you that looked like you were murdered and you wouldn't feel a thing time and time again.
He's just one of those anomalies, I guess you could say, that was just born with that ability to pick shit up like that and be an expert at it.
I thought about what Billy Crystal said when Robin Williams died. And I think Billy Crystal gave that tremendous speech. I think it was at the Oscars. And he finished it up and he said, Robin Williams, what a concept. And I've thought about that over the past several days. Like, Bobby Eaton, what a concept. There's no true comparison. I mean, I look around today and it's like, well, AJ Styles is a great worker and he can do all of this stuff, but it's not the same. It's not
for one thing, just like the humbleness and modesty that comes along with Bobby Eaton. I mean, who in the world has that?
It's impossible
these days. Come on.
And when we interacted with him, the couple of times that we saw him, he was absolutely what everybody said. He was absolutely, it was like going up and talking to your next door neighbor. It wasn't like talking to like the greatest guy who ever got in the ring. It's not like that. That was the thing I wanted Brian Last to ask Jim specifically, like, when you got in the business and when you figured out what this is about and people are telling you this and you're now starting to see things a little bit different, how long did it take you to realize this guy was so special and he was so much better than everybody else? Because I think it was pretty quickly he was able to figure out, oh, wait a minute, this guy's not only good, there's no one as good as this guy.
Just all the way around, yeah.
There's just nothing.
You would think that Cornette would have an eye and a feel for that stuff. So you would think that came pretty early.
he's getting.
But it would be interesting to know exactly when, though.
He gets in the business as a kid in Memphis, and he's just trying to not to vomit when he's on camera the first few times and stuff. And then he's getting some pretty natural heat and stuff. He goes to the other territories, and then they start this Midnight Express thing with Watts. And then it's just weird. I mean, I can't even imagine.
I know.
To go down the road and it's like, we're doing this. I like being with this person, and I'm seeing the best worker out there, period. I'm seeing the best matches. I'm seeing him on nights when he's not even trying, have unbelievable matches. He can do anything. He can work with anybody. If he has to work a singles match with anybody, he can work with them. And we have to work tag team matches with any, three times a day. He'll still go out and kill it. And he'll do amazing shit. And he never gets pissed off. And he always tries to help out homeless people. It's like I said, Bobby Eaton, what a concept. You couldn't dream it up. Yeah. There's no way to dream it up.
And the infamous bag of stuff that he had, the bag of shit.
and it really is when you go and Jimmy was very thoughtful in breaking it down. Like, you can't say, go watch this match and this will tell you everything you need to know about Bobby Eaton. And it's a clinic, because they were all of them were clinics in different ways. And he said, well, if you want to study it, go back to this era and watch this, and then go back to this era and watch this, and then go back and watch this. Yeah. That's all you can really do, because there's just, it's too much. He's too good. It's too natural. He wasn't really even trained. You know, he was kind of self-taught. It's like,
that's what I'm saying, man. He was just bored with this shit.
It was unbelievable that he would be able. And then as you go on throughout life and you're kind of a jobber when you're a kid starting the business, and then you kind of do this, and you know, George Gulas is your tag team partner for a minute, and you do this shit. And eventually you catch on with this Midnight thing, and it gets bigger. And then all of a sudden you're not in front of 200 or 300 people. You're at the Superdome, and you're at the Greensboro Coliseum, and you're in, you know, Philadelphia at the stadium, and you're the same guy. You're doing the same matches, but you're able to turn it up enough and make the act big enough to where it doesn't matter whether you're in a high school gym or if you're in, you know, JFK or Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. It doesn't matter. You're still the same guy. You're still turning it up. You're still able to work with anybody, anywhere, and have it be impressive. That to me is part of the story as well, is how as the levels got up, Bobby could always rise to whatever challenge it was.
And let's not forget the fact that not only was he obviously well known for the Midnight Express and tag team, but like we were saying earlier, he had that title run as a singles guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, who does that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a handful of people, I guess, but out of those handful, I'd put Bobby Eaton up against any of those guys, you know, whoever you come up with.
Well, and the other thing is, like, in 1990, when Jimmy and Stan walk out and they say, Bobby, just stay here and get your money. Over the course of 10 years, they couldn't figure out a way to fire him from World Championship Wrestling. As they go through successive shit, they fire all these people. You know, Bischoff sends a FedEx package to Steve Austin, and eventually he goes on to be the biggest star in the entire industry. And all these people are getting fired and shit. They can't figure out a way to get rid of Bobby Eaton, because you can just use him so many different ways and do so much shit. I mean, it's remarkable.
I know. That's like being the best part-timer at a job. They don't want to give you the full-time position because they'll lose their best part-timer.
But we can't cut you loose. We can't.
And we can't cut you loose.
I saw that his daughter Taryn and Jimmy talks about her moving back to Nashville to try to help him out. She lives in Winston-Salem.
Taryn really? Does.
That's at least what Facebook
I knew she lived. I did not know that.
It's what Facebook was telling me, because we have, you know, a few mutual friends and stuff. And then, you know, she was in Nashville trying to help him out to regulate his medications and get the doctor's appointments right and the physical therapy and all that stuff. And then, so it's just tremendously awful for the family, but I hope they've been given some comfort just by the love that's been shown for this man over the past 4 or 5 days. I'll be honest with you. When the time comes that Ric Flair passes, and the day will come because we all have an expiration date, I don't think I'm going to be any more sad than I was this past week. I don't think I'm going to be any more upset or have any more of a void in my life than I did over this past 4 or 5 days.
I'm telling you, man, he was as big of a part of my wrestling time watching wrestling, especially my younger days, of course, as much as Flair was.
Right.
He really was. And Flair maybe got a little bit of a head start on him by a couple years, but there was a time when Flair left for the WWE, you know, and
exactly
that sort of thing. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm with you, buddy. I think there were even, I'm trying to think of anybody else, but Flair's got to be the biggest one. And yeah, if he, you can't grieve any more over that, then.
And that's what you were, you know, we were all preparing ourselves for when Rick went through a terrible time when he was in a coma and, a few years ago. And we thought,
I think that's part of it too, dude. Don't you think that, we've kind of had that little scare with him more than once, really. A couple of times.
Well, plane crash.
We can go back that far, you know? So it's like we've almost kind of been prepared for that for several different times. So, yeah.
It's something else. And there's been so many people that have redeemed themselves. When they talk about that story in Philadelphia, even the Philadelphia fans in ECW who were of a specific breed and were just really awful human beings. Truly, they were just a hepatitis-filled crowd of awful human beings that you would never want to see in daylight hours. But they had a true appreciation for Bobby. That's part of the thing is when you're a fan and you're a kid and you don't really understand the business. And then you go through the looking glass and you understand based on technology and any number of things, the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. Bobby was a guy who could transcend all of that because you could like him just as a fan, not knowing anything about the business and being a kid. And then you could love him that much more knowing, oh, well, he had to go through this. He had to go through that. And on top of everything else, he was able to persevere and still have great matches and still be Bobby through it all. So he could transcend you not knowing anything about the business and then you having your eyes open. And you realize that the people who knew something about the business and the people who worked in the business, he was the worker's worker. He was the wrestler's wrestler. I don't know. If you look, he epitomized so much of what we love about the business. Like there's so much stuff that they try to tear down with awful stories about these guys and how dreadful they were in any number of ways. And we've just kind of accepted that, oh yeah, Dick Slater may have been a member of the Klan and this person may have raped this person and this person may have killed this person. And then you get to this guy and it's like, well, this guy was exactly what he said he was. And he never made a big deal out of it. Even I think that part of the business that Bobby kind of laughed at when you would hear Ricky Morton talking about selling more tickets than Jesus and all this other shit. I think Bobby would even sit back and just kind of laugh at that. And he enjoyed even that part of the business, but he wasn't part of that. And he didn't need to brag or anything like that or say the shit, but he kind of appreciated that there was a Ricky Morton out there that was out there, lying about this house and that house and all this other shit. Bobby just kind of sat back and liked it. And even as part of the business enjoyed that, but that wasn't him.
And another thing too, man, about him is like, you talk about being scared to meet your hero because they might be an asshole. Well,
right.
Guess what? He wasn't.
No,
not even close. Not just the furthest thing from it. So, I mean, it's just, throw that in there with all the other accolades with him too, man. Just everything about him.
There was nothing controversial about him. It was like, and you can't even go, oh, really? This guy's the best worker? Let me check. So you go back and even in the technology era in the 21st century, when you go back and you can slow things down with granular detail and you go, holy shit, he really was that good. There's just no way around it. There's no like faking, you know, the idea that he can work with all these people. Do he can do whatever moves you want. If you want to mat wrestle, fuck, we'll mat wrestle. You want me to jump off the, you know, go through the table or do this thing off the top? We can do that. If you want me to, you want to have a four, you want to have a scaffold. If there's a scaffold, I can get on this scaffold and give you a good. There's just no, there's nothing. I even think if you know, if stupid Nick Gage would have been alive and what he is in 1990, Bobby could have had a decent match with stupid ass Nick Gage back in
1990. It'd make Nick Gage look like Luthez.
I mean, it's just so much. There's like, you can't pry any of it apart. You can't get your fingers in there and look at it and just go, oh, this is it. That's bullshit. And the guy wasn't really that good. And then you just think about us in this territory, how lucky we were as kids to be able to, like, we got to see this. We got to see the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express. Of course, we thought they'd never met before, and they just happened to, you know, join up in this territory, find each other, and start killing each other. We got to see that. And then, oh, by the way, when they weren't wrestling the Midnight Express, when the Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express weren't wrestling, oh, it was just the Midnights and the Fantastics. Oh, okay. Those matches are like 5-star matches and sellouts and great matches anywhere. I don't give a shit who you are. If they just said, all right, from now on, we will never show a Midnight Express versus Rock and Roll Express match anywhere on the internet. They have been stricken from the record. All you can watch is Midnights versus Fantastics. We'll be like, okay, this is like amazing shit too. It's unbelievable what they were able to do. That was what struck me when they talked about, you know, Brian Lasko's. Well, did he ever say, I love working with this person more than the other? And Bobby would have never said that because it would have shortchanged somebody. But I gotta believe that he loved Robert Fulton so much. Working with Robert Fulton so much, because Robert Fulton could almost a little bit lesser version of Bobby Eaton, Robert Fulton.
Yeah, it's like a mirror image of him, really.
Not for as long, not at the main event status, not making the money that he did, but Robert Fulton he was one of those guys, again, that could work with anybody in any style you wanted to, and he could work in tag teams, he could work in six-man, he could work in a battle royal, he could work singles competition, he could do anything. And again, that was like in Mid-Atlantic, oh, this is your second best rivalry is against the Fantastics, which is unreal. It's just unreal that they would have those matches, you know?
You know, I wonder sometimes, you know, if I grew up on, let's say, like the West Coast.
Yeah.
Would I have been a wrestling fan?
It's hard to say.
Who knows? I mean, because like you said, we were just so, I don't know. I think we were blessed. In my opinion, we were blessed because of where we are and what we got to see as far as the Mid-Atlantic territory and the whole NWA deal and everything. I think we missed out a little bit on some of the Memphis stuff just because of the territory stuff and the non-existence of cable and that sort of thing. But by and large, I think we were pretty blessed, you know, what we got.
In the decade of the 80s, to have that shit served up to us, are you kidding? Oh, my God. To have that roster at that time doing what they were doing?
In our backyard, man. In our backyard.
You can't even quantify how lucky it was. And he was such a massive part of that. And there's almost somewhat of an irony too, also, that, you know, the Mid-Atlantic territory, Crockett Promotions, was known as a tag team territory, you know, when we were children, when we were babies. And then eventually, as tag team wrestling is minimized and minimized and minimized in a lot of different territories, oh, by the way, we're going to go ahead in this territory and we're going to put tag team wrestling right at the top of the card. And we're not going to think twice about it. And in fact, when we want to prop up some of the secondary towns, we're going to have this Super Summer Sizzler Tour and this babyface tag team. We're going to let them drum up business and start killing it over there. So, you know, while everybody else is trying to say that tag teams aren't such a big deal, we're going to say, fuck that. We're going to put tag teams right up there with anybody. And they did. And they did very, very well.
Yeah, they did. I mean, you could rattle off a gazillion tag teams, which really it even says that much more about Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express, how they kind of dominated all those tag teams throughout the years, you know.
They were the ones. I mean, what were the, in addition to those guys, in addition to having the Fantastics, in addition to the Russians, in addition to Steamboat and Youngblood, you know, you could go. Road Warriors, Slaughter and Kernodle were fantastic in their time.
Pick your horseman combo, Tully and Arn.
When Flair and Blackjack were a team. I mean,
God, yes.
It just blows your mind as to like the tag team division. As it matriculated throughout Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling.
You know, we could go back even further than the Youngblood and Steamboat. How about one of the very first things I remember watching as a kid was Steamboat and Paul Jones as a tag team.
Yeah.
And then Paul Jones turning on Steamboat and becoming the heel that he became, you know.
That's the other thing about Bobby is like you look at this guy and you go, this guy's going to be a heel? This guy's like the most natural babyface in the history of ever.
Yeah.
And this guy's going to be a heel. Okay. Not only is he going to be a heel, he's going to be like one of the best heels in the history of ever. But like he can't talk like a heel. But his facials, and he can work like a heel like nobody else can. He can work like a heel. For that moment in time where they turn him babyface in the original Midnight's angle, and you know, they would do that. Fuck, he can wrestle like a baby face.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And he can wrestle better than any baby face. It's unbelievable.
And it's not like he hasn't turned much of a switch, you know.
I know. I just think back to it, just how unbelievable. It's like there's no it is almost like that bag of shit that he carried around with that had everything in it. There's just nothing you could ask Bobby to do that he wouldn't be able to do. You know, there's nothing that he couldn't get over. There's nothing that he wouldn't go out there and
it blows my mind. Utility man to the max. I mean, that's just basically what it just
that part of it just kills me. And then as Jimmy's talking about in the podcast, well, they thought contract's going to be up, and in 1990 they have the reunion. All of a sudden, we were robbed of seeing the Midnight Express in Smoky Mountain. We could have how many great matches would we have seen in Smoky Mountain? Midnight Express against the Gangstas? Can you imagine? Holy shit!
That's about the only ones we didn't see was a Midnight Express against the Gangstas.
And then they could have just done Midnight Rock and Roll for a year or two and drawn money in Smoky Mountain. That would have been fine. They could have done that shit. And then they could have done Midnights again. Oh, it's just, it boggles the mind. There's just no situation that you can turn to and look at that guy where it wasn't like, this was the guy. And now, it's not only, oh, he's the guy among the people who are the fans, but he's also among the boys in the locker room. They're like, oh, yeah, there's like nobody like Bobby. There's nobody that can work like this guy. There's nobody can do the shit that he does. I would trust him any day of the week to go in the ring. And if they said, Bobby's going to take you and he's going to use a jackhammer and he's going to separate your head from your body, they would have been like, oh, yeah, he'll figure out a way to make that happen and not hurt me. Cool.
He could probably do it as a baby face.
There's nobody. That's right. That's right. Do it as a baby. They cheer him. They go, oh, yeah. Way to take the head off of that guy. There's nobody who ever wrestled Bobby Eaton who could ever say, well, the guy hurt me. You know, the guy did this to it. Even as an accident. Even there's nobody in wrestling over the thousands of matches over the years, tag team singles, any territory who go, well, Bobby Eaton hurt me. He broke my leg. There's nobody that can say that.
Well, he's just one of those guys. It's just that was born with it. Just came naturally. And I don't know how else to say it.
It's just impossible to believe that there's ever going to be. There's never going to be another one. And then
I can't believe that
there's never going to be. You couldn't do it. You couldn't go into a laboratory. You couldn't go into a robotics.
Not the whole package.
You couldn't do it.
No.
It just blows my mind, and I'm so gratified. I didn't realize that people would be so effusive in their praise over the past several days. But then you heard any number of guys. I don't know. Did you see the post from C.W. Anderson, the video that he put together?
No, I did.
He got to work with him, and it was in the ECW arena, and he got to work with him, and he there was a a curtain on one side, and then there was another curtain in the back that would separate from the front. And in the one area that was kind of air conditioned, where some of the super veterans, your Taz's, your Shane Douglas's, they would change because it was air conditioned. And then everybody else had to go in the sweaty kind of hallway and then kind of change over there. And he walks into the ECW arena, goes to the back, and there's Paul Heyman just chatting with Bobby Eaton. And CW said he had to immediately stop, go into the cool changing room and just kind of get himself together. And because he had kind of a panic attack, because he's like, that's fucking Bobby Eaton. That was the guy as a kid who tricked me out. And he worked with him and it meant everything to him. And you hear all of these stories from these guys who, to an entire generation of people, he was so inspiring and independent. And he didn't care. He didn't care if it was a high school gym in Hickory or something like that where he was working. And he would have all of these kids who were like, look, me and my dad watched you the whole time and we hated you, but you're part of the reason I was in the business. And I don't think he could ever really process that, but I think he appreciated them saying
I definitely think he appreciated it.
You know, the conversation that I remember having with him specifically was because we talked about Kenny Stabler, who was like my favorite NFL player ever and had died. And the irony of all of that is Kenny Stabler gets inducted into the Hall of Fame after he's dead. And I think probably that's going to happen to Bobby, you know, I think, and Jimmy will go along with it because it's going to be a pretty significant payday probably for the family. But why you put the Rock and Roll Express into the Hall of Fame, who do you think those people were wrestling that made them all the money and made them that great? I mean, nothing against
go back and listen to that podcast that we did not too long after that happened. Cause I was like, how do you put the Rock and Roll Express in and not put the Midnight Express in at the same time?
And I'm
how
not do you saying not?
I'm not I'm saying sorry. No disrespect to anybody there.
And you know, Ricky and Robert could have great matches with anybody. They could. And they were great.
Oh, yeah.
They were amazing baby face tag team. And they did have great, and they had wonderful matches with the Russians, for example. I remember some of those matches as being as full of heat and as great as anything.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
How you look at that and then go, well, we'll do Rock and Roll 1 year and the next year we'll come back do Midnights. Cause we just had Cornette and Cornette will come back and now as there may be some people, I don't know. I don't know anybody in that company. I would hope that Paul Levesque realized how great Bobby was before he died. And I don't know that Vince even cares or gets it at all. But I'm hoping there's somebody in that company who was at least surprised by what is this? Why is this trending? Why are all these people saying this stuff about this guy? And then they'll kind of look into it. I don't know if there's anybody in that company that would do that anymore, Brian.
I don't know of anybody. No, Levesque might be the only one that's remotely close enough to think about doing something like that.
And that's another thing. And there's a transition here because Vince always considered himself, at least even after the last 20 years, as the guardian of the pro wrestling business. And there were certain people he would let into the Hall of Fame because it was a nod to his father and the preservation of pro wrestling. I think that's gone. I think that may be AEW's job now. I think they may be the guardians of the business going forward. You know, I don't know if there's going to be an AEW Hall of Fame, but for people like Bobby Eaton, and there again, I keep saying that, there's nobody like Bobby Eaton and there won't be anybody like Bobby Eaton, but for certain historical figures, WWE can't or won't be able to acknowledge them because it's too far away from, they've gone too far away from their identity. So it's going to be up to Tony Khan and the vice presidents and whoever is involved with that company to kind of be the vanguards of the history of the business going forward.
Well, as it stands right now, they really on the roster have more guys that are really like that than WWE. And I'm talking like the Arn Andersons, the Tully Blanchards, the Jake Roberts. I don't know, Dallas Page, is he still affiliated with him at all? Or
I think it's
say Dustin. I mean, Dustin's no spring chicken, you know.
But he and his brother both have a very real tie to the history of this business.
Yeah, yeah. And so
there's a
good little mixture there, but they definitely have a nice full load of veterans like that, like we just talked about.
It appears that AEW is a company of wrestlers and WWE is a company of writers. I think
characters, yeah.
That it's writers who have no real connection to the wrestling business, and the less the better, really. And now WWE is even beyond its writers and executives. It's Nick Khan's ball game right now, and the game is to try to cut payroll as much as he possibly can. So there's no real tangible connection with WWE to pro wrestling, if you think about it in that way, which seems like an odd thing to say, but I think that's a fairly defensible point.
I don't think it's an odd. It is kind of an odd thing to say in the sense of just the sheer sense of losing your touch with how you got to where you are, kind of thing.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, it's pretty typical of WWE to do shit like this. I mean, they you know, over the years, you can see they've pretty much transparently evolved into the corporate monster that they are today, with shitty storylines and, like you said, the shitty writers and everything. It's just a machine to pump money in and out, or in, right, more or less, I guess. But you know, I think that's one thing you can say too about AEW, and I think you've kind of said it already, is they're more of a wrestling show anymore. Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of their, I don't know. Was that part of their mantra coming in? Were they going to be the wrestling show, or did they just,
I think,
become kind of the wrestling show?
I think they were going to be the company that didn't shy away from the term wrestling and showcasing wrestling. And WWE has tried to get further and further and further away from wrestling. They hate the term wrestling. If there was any way for him to call his major event anything other than WrestleMania, I think they would have done that a long time ago.
Sports Entertainment Mania.
And when you do that, are embarrassed by what you are or how you began, or you're trying to get further and further away from the essence, you know, it's like Ben and Jerry's saying, I don't really think we're an ice cream company. We don't really see ourselves as an ice cream company.
Yeah.
Right. That's what it kind of feels like.
I don't know if they were just playing on words here or the way they expressed it, but I read something about NXT becoming kind of going by the wayside, just kind of getting rid of NXT. I don't know if they meant that in a figurative sort of way, you know, just doing away with all the hoopla that came with it and just focusing on getting talent in there to groom them. I think it's almost like they were saying NXT was going to go back to what its original purpose, I guess, was, is to be like a talent enhancer kind of thing, instead of becoming the entity that it's become. And now that all the name guys and girls have moved on to wherever, and we're stuck with what we've talked about before, with the stale Adam Coles and the stale Kyle O'Reilly's and the stale Tommaso Ciampa's, and everything. And it's just not the NXT that it's not the, and if you, even with the pandemic and everything, since they've had audiences back on, I've noticed on NXT, it's not the same NXT enthusiastic crowd that used to be there, you know, when they were so hot for all these, I mean, you know, there's a ton of people you could rattle off and that they used to be hot for that, you know, eventually got fucked over when they moved up to the other roster, the main roster or whatever. But I just don't think it's the same. And I don't know, maybe they are going to get rid of it or whatever, but that might be a good idea, to be honest. I don't know if it's got the cachet or the flavor that it once had, for sure.
Well, I think Paul Levesque's vision was always to do, you know, when it was really good, to be exactly what it was. But now this is the Nick Khan era, and it's, we have to figure out from a corporate level where this thing fits, and it doesn't fit. It just doesn't fit into the Nick Khan vision, and it doesn't fit into, if Comcast does their due diligence and buys this thing, I'm not sure. There always used to be this thing about like AA baseball being where you see the real stars of the sport, right? Because these are the guys that are going to be humming. AAA was always a place to like, well, we can't figure out what to do with this guy. He's good enough to play Major League Baseball, but he's not really doing so. We'll just stash him at the AAA level, right?
Right.
There was always kind of mindset in baseball. But at the AA level, that's where you see the good guys. That's where you see the guys.
They're grinders, really, yeah.
So it feels kind of like the AAA version, NXT does. And I don't mean AAA in terms of the Mexican lucha company.
Right,
I mean, like, AAA is in terms of baseball.
Baseball level, yeah.
Yes.
It makes sense also as far as like some of these cuts that they've been making. I mean, it's like they're making room for some of these, for some of the NXT people to be divvied up in between, you know, I guess SmackDown and Raw.
But it's all,
I don't know.
It's all just corporate strategy. It's like, well, we need this much payroll and this person can fit here and this person can fit here. And that's what it's going to be. And it just blows my mind. So if you're Adam Cole, why would you ever sign another contract with WWE?
I wouldn't. Shit.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. I wouldn't. That's just it. I mean,
there's no future for you there. There's no corporate. I mean, you can't fit into some bean counters spreadsheet of I need to be this and I can do this. And then, of course, Vince McMahon thinks that you're one of the vanilla midgets. So there's no future for Adam Cole in any way in World Wrestling Entertainment.
So where do you go, man? Where do you go if you're Adam Cole? I mean, do you go to AEW and get stuck in the midst of all these millions of people that are signing with them and have been with them? I mean, it's saturated over there. I mean, do you go there and get lost in the crowd, or do you go to Impact and shit like that, or what? What do you do?
Go to Japan, try to do something in Japan, reheat that thing back up. I don't know. I'm not really sure. I think he's much better off in AEW. But again, the mid card in AEW is just so glutted right now with so much nonsense that should be. I mean, this is where people are going to be upset with me, because 30 minutes ago I was talking about how great AEW is, and now I'm talking about how at least half of the roster needs. That's where the cut. That's the remarkable thing, is WWE can't stop cutting and AEW can't start. That's what's going on in wrestling right now. We can't fire QT Marshall and Sean Spears and Michael Nakazawa and all these other dumbasses who are doing nothing. And we can't do any of that stuff so that some of the other people might be able to shine and make their way up to the top. We can't do any of that stuff. But, you know, WWE gets rid of Bray Wyatt and gets rid of all these guys. And there's a lot of ironies in this business right now.
Well, I tell you something. I don't know. You tell me. I was a little shocked out of all of the people that have been let go. And of course, I know a lot of them from WWE. That is, I know several of them have to honor their 90-day contracts and that sort of thing. But I was a little surprised to see Ever Rise already at AEW. I don't know if that's a one-time deal kind of thing, or if they're really signed with them for the long haul, but damn, Ever Rise, you know,
I always wonder, and it's always about who you know, which one of the vice presidents that you had an indie, you know, had a great match with at PWG back in 2015.
I guess so.
That part of it is very, but it does look like going forward through all of the corporate stuff that AEW is going to be the vanguard of the wrestling business in terms of recognizing its history. And I hope you know, on some level, I do hope Tony Khan takes that very seriously. That's where him being the newsletter geek and all that stuff is going to be pretty handy.
But he seems like he would be that person, but I'm not 100% convinced of it.
I'm not either, but you're my best hope, Obi-Wan. At this point, the other guys have fucked it all up so badly and have gotten so away from whatever their roots were.
You know, and I tell you, man, if it wasn't for the damn pandemic, I swear to you, man, I really think that NWA would be on a different level right now. They were on the upstart. They had a hot crowd there every fucking week or every time that they were recorded for YouTube or whatever they were doing. And I just think, look at all those guys and girls that were there that have moved on and are doing well. Like Ricky Starks, like LA Knight.
LA Knight's great.
You know, I mean, I'm probably forgetting about a few people, but Thunder Rosa.
Camille looked pretty good the other night as far as I was concerned.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, well.
Now, you did see the rumor that I tweeted out, and it was just speculation on Marty DeRosa's part. He's trying to read the tea leaves.
No, I didn't.
He thinks that some of this conversation that you're hearing a little bit on the Jeff Jarrett show means that Conrad and Jeff Jarrett are going to buy NWA. That's what he's speculating.
Buy it, like straight up buy it from Billy Corgan?
From Billy Corgan, yeah. They think that Billy Corgan may be done with it and has gone as far, and Conrad, who's got more money than Davy Crockett, if I might quote Forrest Gump, him and Jeff Jarrett are going to get in there and rock and roll with it.
Okay. Well, you know, that's fine. Well, here's my suggestion. I know I'm no Conrad and definitely not a Jeff Jarrett, but maybe they're thinking what I'm thinking, that now's the time to take something like an NWA and pump it up into something with all these people that have been released. Look how many people you could sign just from WWE alone.
Yeah.
And get somebody like a Filthy Tom Lawler from MLW over there. You know, there's so many things you could do with that. So if they do that, take that and run with it like that, I think, God, I'd watch the hell out of it.
I believe that Conrad's father-in-law may be a free agent. He might be able to help out with that NWA thing.
Well, he is. He sure is. He sure enough is.
So, you know, you never know when he might pop up and try to bump something up, you know.
Well, hey, man. Stranger things have happened. And it's very, very, I don't know, coincidental timing, I guess, for all this to be going down.
It would be interesting to see what those guys were able to do. Any closing thoughts on another award-winning episode of Katie Vick is Alive Alive?
Totally off the wrestling path here. I do want to say, God bless you, Marky Post.
Oh yeah, that was another heartbreaker.
There's been so many people over, you know, Dusty Hill and people like that over the last. But Marky, that one just punched me right in the gut, man. That was right after Bobby too, man.
And that was tough.
She was just one of those, man, that that just struck me as a young man. And I'm like, and I just grew to, you know, continue watching her, and she's just always been one of my favorites. And damn, man, just
At one point in time, they're one of the biggest stars on television.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people forget that little gig she had with John Ritter, the Hearts of Fire, for a couple of seasons or so. That was a gut puncher for me personally. So right after the Bobby deal.
The part about Bobby was he dies on August the 4th. Stan's birthday is August the 5th. It's like, that's harsh.
God, man. Poor Stan. I mean, poor Stan after, you know, deal with that every time he has a birthday thinking about that.
Brian can be followed on Instagram, also on Twitter at Bryce Sports, on TikTok at Stanley Jackson 23. Our show is at Katie Vick Alive on Twitter at Katie Vick Alive. I am at Britt Whitmire, BRITTWHITMIRE. That's on the Twitter machine. On Instagram, it is BW4Reels, BDUB4REELZ. And if you like what we do, please shop at our Amazon store. Back to School is right here. And you can shop for Back to School at our Amazon store, which is katievick.com. It's katievick.com. God bless you, Bobby Lee. Until next time, we'll see you ringside.
Fans, that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.